Good day, nerds, and thanks for joining us for episode 5 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, and joined by the founder of the Nerd Cantina, Steve. In this episode, we will be discussing the Game of Thrones, the new trailer for the Amazon Prime show, The Boys, some PlayStation news, and we are counting down the days until Endgame. We also have some interviews with the creators of some nerdy children's toys, Beaker Creatures, and Sue Burke, the author of the book Semiosis. As always, we've got a full show today, so stick around.
Calling back all nerds. Nerds!
All right, well, welcome to episode 5 of the Nerd Cantina Show. Steve, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right this morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Hopefully for all the audience here listening today that you've enjoyed episode 1 through 4 or given it a try. If this is your first episode, great. Hope that you enjoy this one and subscribe and review on whatever podcast player you're listening to today. Recently at the Nerd Cantina, we've come across, or Steve came across, a new podcast player. Actually, I don't know how new it is, but a podcast player new to me, Podcoin.
I was doing some research on making sure our show was on all the players that we could possibly get it on, just so that we can reach the biggest audience we have. And I came across this Podcoin. I'm a big fan of earning rewards to get free shit for doing stuff I'm going to do anyways. You know, I have the Best Buy rewards. I have the AMC stubs. Like, I'm going to do these things. I'm going to spend this money anyways. If you're going to give me free shit, here's my email. They have a system where you earn points for every minute you listen to a podcast. And those points can be redeemable for Starbucks gift cards, Amazon gift cards. Us being a new show, they actually give you 1.5 times the points for listening to our show for us being a new show that we added to there. So I just wanted to let our listeners know, you know, if you don't have a personal preference of the way you listen to your podcast, to give Podcoin a try. You know, if you're going to be listening to hours of podcasts every week, you might as well be racking up them points.
Yeah, and that's why I'm actually upset that I haven't heard of this, because I've done all of like the grocery apps and all the things that you earn points for, things that you just do in life, and credit card hacking and all that nonsense. And I've never heard of this. And I mean, there's days where I'm listening to 8 hours of podcasts in a day. I got at least 2 hours, 2.5 hours in a commute in a car. That's a lot of points lost that I could have hopefully, even if it's just earned a $5 gift card somewhere down the road, that's $5 for no effort.
Yeah, for nothing. You know, the point system is, the scale is pretty high, but you're doing this anyways. A lot of other podcast players, you're just giving them stream numbers. So you might as well be racking up points for yourself. Also, with us being, with us claiming our podcast, we got a code to give out to our listeners, Nerd Cantina, one word. And you get 300 free bonus points for signing up with our code. So you start off out the gate, what is that, 3 hours? Or it's way more than 3 hours listened, actually, you know, the way they break down the points. If you don't have a personal preference on players and you want to give it a try, it's on the Google Store and iTunes. Put Nerd Cantina in for the code when you sign up and start racking up them points. They actually did a questionnaire for people that I filled out, and they're going to be offering some interesting things too. Their future plans are for people to be able to donate their coins to podcasts to help podcasts be profitable and things like that. So they have an interesting model to get you to listen and enjoy your podcast. So I recommend everybody giving it a try and start racking up the points and get some free Amazon money.
All right, well, let's go ahead and move into this week's news topics or nerd news. And realistically, it's actually a pretty slow week. No major like trailer drops or anything that's come out. One of the big things that we didn't even mention last week, because last week of the Star Wars celebration was so big, was Game of Thrones. We didn't even mention the Game of Thrones premiere. And now we got 2 episodes in, and without any spoilers, for those of you who haven't watched it yet, it's a good season. It's a good start. And it's, for me, I've talked to a lot of people, and I think for the newer fans of Game of Thrones, the people who kind of binge their way through, man, they just want to get to the fights, and it's too slow for the new people who joined seasons late, binged their way through, and they kind of got to action early. these first two episodes are literally like throwbacks to the first season, where it's really just character driven, character building, a lot of just tension and dialogue. I'm a fan. I like the direction it's going. I like the way that they're setting it up. I expected it maybe a little to hit a little harder with it being a condensed season, but I know they're getting to it.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, we record Monday mornings, you know, so the last week it was Game of Thrones was fresh out the gate, and we were afraid of kind of ruining it for people. Now that we're 2 weeks in, if you're kind of behind, you know, you can skip the next 5 minutes of the show and get to the next section. But I think we're kind of up and running with everything. I think we're safe to be talking about this. And yeah, the first episode was really good. Kind of just buttoning up a few ends, kind of letting you know where everybody is, how they got there. Kind of, it was a good season starter, pushed the plot forward, but at the same time, kind of wrapped up some odds and ends and got you kind of focused on the path they're going for the next five episodes. And then this last week, you know, was a really good kind of, once again, just set up for what is going to be an hour and some odd change of just probably gruesome, brutal fighting. They said the longest battle scene in television history, movie history.
Yeah, I feel like this last episode was, it was great, and it's what's needed. You've got to assume it's just going to be a massive amount of death that's going to take place throughout this season.
They named this episode the Night of Something Something, and it really should have been. Seven Kings, yeah, it really should have been Say Bye to Your Favorite Motherfucker, because it had that looming feeling of half you motherfuckers going to die.
I like it, again, it being a character driven show and not necessarily the action. It was never the draw of the show. It gave the characters a chance to, hey, how do you spend your last evening? Everybody's got to go into the day assuming that they're dead. So it's how do you spend your last evening? It's a bunch of characters and how they choose to spend, whether it's with the wine, it's the battle preparation for some of those that are super serious, those that aren't. Took to fire and wine, and it really just hammered home a lot of these characters that we either loved or hated. It just gave us a little more.
And they did give enough aspects to where I think, you know, everybody in the audience could ponder, well, where would I go? You know, who would I spend it with? What would I do? You know, it's a kind of a tragically morbid scenario to imagine, but you know, there's plenty of people in real life that contemplate those situations all the time. You know, we are in a war-driven world, and there are people right now thinking that, you know, it could be their last moments and where they want to spend them. So to see all the characters in that kind of aspect was really interesting, and it did drive some good content, some good character expansion. Yeah, it was. I enjoyed it. I'm gonna laugh though if for some reason Game of Thrones is just trolling everyone right now, and next week we get, you know, you think the battle's coming, and we get an hour long of Cersei and backstory or some shit.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Is they're gonna kick it? They're gonna kick it to King's Landing for 40 minutes. And then it's just going to be the Night King just like sieging. He's not even going to attack. He's just going to surround him and just siege the whole area. And it's going to go into a month-long siege warfare.
I'm laughing at everyone's reaction to Arya having sex. Arya grew up as like everybody's little sister. You know what I mean? And then you had to see your little sister's side boob and her loser virginity, and everyone, either people were like all for it, like, yes, and other people were just like, oh no, like, not my little Arya.
And that's where it's like, you know, we're trying to avoid spoilers, but if I mean, I watched the episode that night. And I already had that moment spoiled for me, because on the West Coast, I'm watching it, you know, by the time I ended up watching it, I'm watching hours
later
than everybody
else. So they delay it in the West Coast?
No, so I could watch it. I just got to wait till I put my kids to bed. So for me, that's 8:30. That's 11:30 East Coast time.
Yeah, I asked Ian, like, hey, man, when does Game of Thrones come on for you? And it's like Monday at 4 o'clock, you know? And I was like, ooh. He's like, yeah, all you internet American trolls will just spoil it for us Kiwis. You know, and I was like, man, that's rough, you know?
I'm watching it at a reasonable time. just still a couple hours behind East Coast, and I'm already seeing the Nerdist is already punching my feed. Again, I have to shut off the notifications to my phone during the entire season, especially with Endgame coming
up. Yeah, because you get a push notification that just ruins it in the headline. Because I get a push notification
that just says, you know, Naked Arya or whatever else, and it's just like, oh, son of a... All right.
Yeah, the amount of GIFs and memes that they put out right away, you know, some of them are vague. So, like, if you didn't see the episode, you might not get it. And some of them are just blatant. And, like, I had a friend yesterday on Facebook that was just like, you spoiler assholes, I didn't get a chance. You know, I went out last night, I didn't get a chance to watch it, and you already ruined it for me. And, like, in her complaining about the spoilers, she put in, I already know Arya had sex and Brienne got knighted. So she even, in her bitching about the spoilers, put in spoilers for those coming. It was like, I'm taking you all you bastards down with me. I don't care, you know? And it's like, yeah, this is one of those cultural events that, like, either bury your head in the sand or squeeze it in your schedule because you're fucked, man.
We just ruined something for somebody, I'm sure. But sorry about that, guys.
I highly sorry doubt that, we're going to be the ones if if we're the ones that spoiled that episode for you. And on, you know, when we launched this on Wednesday, man, you had 3 days. Like, I'm pretty sure you probably seen the meme. Like,
well, and
we
I'm
give a warning.
At least this episode really didn't have too much to spoil. Yeah, I mean, I guess you could know ahead of time that Arya has sex. It doesn't really do anything other than just mentally prime you to watch your little sister get naked. There really wasn't a ton that
was
spoil-worthy in this episode.
Well, everybody was waiting for Tormund to get in the same room as Brienne and Tarth.
Oh, man. I think that's like the biggest letdown. If that doesn't happen throughout the season, that's going to be the biggest letdown. I'm sure there's already
one of them,
like,
if one
crazy...
of them dies in this battle and they never hook up.
Oh,
like...
man. That's all right. The porn parodies, I'm sure, already exist.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure.
I'm sure there's already still some ginger-bearded guy and a incredibly tall woman.
Pretty sure there's
porn
probably
parody.
Seven of them up on Pornhub right now.
Yeah, there's that's fine. We'll all find them hooking up in our own way. Well, to move from our slightly spoily Game of Thrones talk here, another thing that's come up this week that I know you're excited about, you turned me onto this comic. Well, man, that was probably like 7 years ago or 8 years ago.
Yeah, a long time ago. I have all the first run printing, so I've been on it since day one.
The Boys and that trailer getting released for the Amazon Prime series that's going to pick up.
Which I'm so pumped for. Like, there were talks about doing it on, like, HBO or Showtime, and you could go, you know, pretty graphic on those other networks. But I think the streaming services are really where there's, like, almost no holds barred content, you know? Like, it's one of those things. And Amazon's really dumping some money into original content now with this Lord of the Rings show they're producing and now The Boys coming out soon.
I honestly always forget. Like, I've been an Amazon Prime member. I've watched, like, three things on Prime Video in my entire time.
You got to get on it. The Man in the High Castle's pretty good.
So that's one of the three things that I've watched. I watched the, what is it? The, not... Jack Reacher, but
Jack Reacher was good. That's on there. Oh no, it was not Jack Reacher. It's oh shit, you're gonna stop me, you dick. Well, yeah, John Krasinski.
We watched Jim Halpert be a be an agent,
and
honestly,
Miss Maisel,
that show was good.
Miss Maisel's on there. If you haven't watched Miss Maisel, that's a great show.
I know. I hear it is. I've never watched it, but yeah. So those. There's a couple shows that are on Amazon Prime. I just forget that it's out there. I don't watch enough. And then when I saw this trailer drop for The Boys, I thought, all right, Amazon, like this looks brutal. It looks like they're not pulling punches,
man.
Even in the trailer.
Even
so
in
you
the
gotta
Red Band
man,
trailer, they let
that's
a
what I'm
lot
saying.
Go.
Like, in the trailer that just gets blasted on Facebook, whether you want it or not, right? Yeah, it's pretty brutal. So imagine the show for the people who are actually coming to find it. It's got to play pretty true to the comic and the comic.
So
is
for
gruesome.
Our listeners that have never heard of The Boys, it's a comic by Garth Ennis, who's the same guy who does The Preacher, and The Preacher was somewhat successful on AMC, but they are also limited on what they can do on AMC as far as the storyline goes. Both The Preacher and The Boys are brutally graphic.
Yes. Brutally. Yeah, Preacher doesn't play out the way it does in the comics on AMC for sure.
No. So they really portray the inner savagery of what humans are capable of in both these comics in two different kind of contexts. So the boys are a group of guys that police superheroes and supervillains. Because even the superheroes, we all know that you give people Superman powers, they're probably going to do some good. But behind closed doors, just like most of our politicians that we believe in, like most of our favorite singers and songwriters and actors that we choose to put up on this pedestal, there's some deep-seated dark bullshit that goes on behind closed doors. And The Boys is about what goes on behind those closed doors with heroes, villains, and this group of people that feel that nobody should have this kind of level of power and try to police them all.
And I love the anti-hero stories that that are emerging. The Boys being, again, it was just, it's an incredibly graphic comic, but it is where I would tend to think the world would go, is the superheroes are really only being superheroes because they enjoy the fame and the publicity, but they're just deranged megalomaniacs who just, they know that humans are less than them and they treat everybody absolutely terribly. I mean, like I said, that this first little snip of the trailer, hey, I mean, it shows it. It did.
Oh, yeah. And I think they purposely did that to let people know that have read The Boys like myself. Like, I have every issue they printed, first run. My comic book value just at least doubled with this trailer being released. And yeah, I think they wanted to send out a signal to people to let them know, like, look, man, we're doing it right. Seth Rogen's one of the producers. You know, the people. I didn't know that. That's cool. Yeah, people that care about this kind of shit are making this even. So I'm really very hopeful for this series. I can't wait till it comes out. I hope everybody gives it a shot. I hope everybody goes out and gets the trade paperbacks of the originals, at least the first trade, the first six, you know, so you can get a good, you know, you have some time before the show releases. You can go to your local comic book store, order it off Amazon, whatever, and order that first The Boys trade and read the first six issues and get a real good feel of, like, holy shit, this is what they're going to put on TV? Okay. Like, man, it's going to be a roller coaster ride of brutality, and I am all about that life, man.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It comes out, what, July? It was the release date for it, so
yeah.
It'll be a fun summer. Binge watch that somewhere throughout my summertime.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to put them all up on one at one time or if they're going to release it every week. Like, so see, even some of the streaming services, they'll release like the first three episodes so you could binge the first three and they get you hooked. And then they release an episode a week after that until the show's done. So like, that's how they did, I want to say Handmaid's Tale. That's how they did Miss Maisel. The Runaways on Hulu did it like that. So they give you just enough to binge in one night. And then after episode three, it's just like, all right, come back next week. And you're just like, oh, what? Like, I have no life. I wanted to sit here and pound this all out. Like, what the fuck? So I don't know how they're going to release it yet, if it's going to be a bingeable thing or if it's going to be a weekly release.
Well, I guess we'll wait and see until mid-July, but, you know, the next big piece of, I mean, it's not news, but it's
Endgame. Something we're waiting right? for, man. It's,
you know, we're recording this on Tuesday, so you're what, 2 days away from seeing it?
I'm 2 days away. I had to buy paper tickets because of the AMC crash. So I wrote a little article the day that happened, just out of my frustration. I'm an AMC A-list member. I also have an article about what it's like to be an A-list member and the benefits of that. So I wasn't going to pay for a ticket on Fandango when I know I had a free one coming. So I literally sat there watching from 7 in the morning till 9:30 in the morning, watching my AMC and Fandango wheel spinning, waiting to buy tickets. It's the first time I've ever seen in Fandango a online queue. Like, I went to buy Endgame tickets, and it's like, you will be able to buy Endgame tickets in 13 minutes. Like, I've never seen that on that app before, and I had friends that were like in a 35-minute holding pattern waiting to buy tickets. You know, and when I finally got through to pick my seats, nothing, because the AMC servers bombed. So Fandango's trying to reserve my seats, and it can't contact the AMC servers, so that wheel is just fucking spinning. So I take my happy ass out of my house at 9:30 in the morning and do some 1980s shit and walk right up to the Man, I remember when you had to buy concert tickets at Carson Perry Scott in the service center because you had to go to a Ticketmaster.
Like, I'm just saying that that existed far longer than 1980s.
Well, you know, I dated myself, so fuck yeah, I don't care. You know, but yeah, I had to go straight to the AMC when they opened the doors at 9:30 to buy the paper tickets right there. When I pulled up, there was five people in cars sitting there waiting for the doors open. And as soon as they seen me walk out of my car, they all got out of their car like, oh, he thinks he's going, he's getting tickets. Yeah. I'm getting my tickets. And I just laughed and looked at everybody. I was like, Endgame? They're like, man, the app. And you just, people just, the frustration level of, it was amazing. Oh, yeah. Like, I'm so surprised that, like, there wasn't an even bigger blowback on AMC because, like, you know, there's at least 10,000 people that got fucked out of tickets opening night. At least.
I mean, I saw that, what was it? There was an article that people were selling, like, the screener release tickets. They were reselling them for $1,000 and whatever.
Well, I'm not going to lie. If somebody had the cash in hand in front of me, I have the paper tickets in my wallet, I'd hand it right over for a couple stacks. Like, I am a nerd and I love this life, but I'm no fucking dummy, okay? Like, you want my Endgame tickets Thursday, 6 o'clock in Naperville? You can quick pay me, PayPal, Cash App, whatever. You send them stacks, they're yours, okay? I will wait. Our readers will have to deal with a late review, but I'm sure they'll get along fine. I want them racks.
Yeah, I'll be going and seeing it on Sunday. So I got tickets for Sunday morning, a nice 10 a.m. Showing, because that's when I go see movies. When I find a babysitter, that's when I go see a movie.
Well, my girlfriend canceled this week because I bought her a ticket. She came with me to Endgame or to Infinity War. And I don't know how I mentioned it. I think I mentioned it like as wearing my Infinity Gauntlet cup to the theater and drinking out of the cup the whole time. And I was like, well, I don't know if it's going to hold enough pop for 3 hours. And she's like, 3 hours? I was like, what, you don't know? It's like 3 hours and 10 minutes. She was like, 3 hours and 10 minutes. She's like, yeah, no, she ain't about that life. She's like, I will wait till you buy it and we can watch it on the couch and I can go to the bathroom and make some food. She's like, I don't need to see it opening weekend. So now I have an extra ticket, and I put the pressure on our ginger friend, Rami. And I was like, how much does your wife love you, pal? Because I got an extra ticket to Endgame at 6 o'clock on Thursday. And he was just like, I don't know. Like, I already bypassed like two friends that I know. There's no way their wife will let them leave on a Thursday all night with their kids at home. So I'm just enjoying putting the pressure on my friends' marital relationships by having this extra Endgame ticket.
So for me, the marital strain would be if I watched it without Natalie. Like, it's not about the leaving the kids. It's no, we will watch it together. We've seen every one of these together, and this is not the one to go solo on.
Yeah, oddly enough, a guy who runs a nerd podcast and nerd website has a girlfriend that's never seen Star Wars and could give two shits about the Marvel MCU. So, I mean, I made her watch the entire movies all the way up leading to Endgame. So she's interested in how it ends, but not interested enough to get a babysitter and deal with 3 hours in a crowded movie theater.
And it's one thing to see it early. It's another thing to see it on those opening releases. Honestly, I actually don't even care to normally do those. They're just too...
See, I miss the days where they only had them at midnight. So there was a long time where they wouldn't allow them to do these early showings, and they had to wait till midnight when it was actually officially Friday. So you'd only get like the diehards then, you know, because no one's people got work Friday morning. You're not getting.
And
home
I always felt
two,
out of place in those
morning.
Rooms because those people are cheering and yelling and excited every time
a
new person comes
up.
Every time some new person comes up on the screen, it's like, oh yeah, all right, here comes Ant-Man. Just shut up. Everybody be quiet. It's a different crowd in those first days.
In a previous podcast, the people that clap at the end of movies, I just like...
Well, and clap in the middle and cheer in the middle when, you know, when a famous character shows up. Just shut up. Just stop.
I know. Chris Evans is not coming out and giving you a curtsy bow. Like, you know, it's not going to happen. So just like... Let me enjoy my movie in silence and let's move on.
Yeah. So I'll go see it Sunday at 10 a.m. And I'm sure it'll probably just be a bunch of middle-aged parents all looking at each other with their coffees in hand as we stroll.
I do have a funny story of the last premiere I went in. So I felt like a big asshole. So I'm sitting there in the AMC theater. And I sit next to this dude, and I'm waiting for... I can't remember what it was. It might have been Shazam, or it was a big one, you know? So I look, and I see this guy has this, like, boom arm coming out of his cup holder. And he has, like, this phone, like, that he's aiming at the screen. And I'm like, did this dude... I'm trying to like turn my shoulder so the ushers don't think I'm with this dude, you know, and like he's like angling it all nice and perfect. And it's just got this like movable boom arm coming out of the cup holder. And I'm like, the balls of this dude, like the balls, you know. So the movie starts going and I'm still like trying to not even catch dude in my peripheral. Like I want nothing to do with this dude. And I finally kind of like look over and it just sinks in how big of a judgmental asshole I am. The movie had closed captioning for deaf people, and that's what they give deaf people for movies. So literally, he just angles it like underneath his screen, and it had words scrolling across it so you could hear the... I felt stupid as hell. I felt like an asshole for just assuming this dude next to me is like bootlegging his premiere movie. But I did learn something. I didn't know that was a thing. No, like I don't have
deaf all the
friends.
Way. You're just a weird guy cringing away from a handicapped person.
You know, I'm gonna get his deaf cooties or something. You know, like I just felt like such a dick.
Oh yeah, that's terrible.
So yeah, that's my life, guys. Give you a peek into my mind.
All right, well, I think we'll move on to. There's a story that came out about PS4 banning. Essentially, he's a white supremacist. But what's been a theme so far of our first couple episodes here is talking about kind of this digital space and digital rights and this is right up that alley in the sense of anybody who hasn't seen it.
This can affect gaming. You know what I mean? Yeah. This is a big kind of thing in gaming. No, we don't condone anybody's hate speech. We don't condone, you know, the all the subject matter that people may be talking about. But we do enjoy living in a country that allows free speech. You know, I believe that.
And it comes down to, so this really falls in the realm of, so just to recap a bit of the story. So PlayStation Network via PlayStation 4, there was a guy who was admittedly on PlayStation Network, a white supremacist, participated in hate speech against the individuals that were in the PlayStation Network that he would game with. And he was rightfully banned from PlayStation Network, that it goes against the terms and services of online gaming. He was banned from PlayStation Network. The issue that becomes weird is that all of his downloaded games, so his entire PS4, he had a bunch of downloaded games or whatever else, he lost access to anything he's paid for. All of his games, he has lost access to. And right now he's on like a temporary ban, a week-long ban, but he will probably get a lifetime ban because, again, he has openly argued with PlayStation or whatever else about his being a white supremacist. He's not backing down from, so he'll probably get a lifetime ban, which means he's going to lose access to all these games. Where the issue just comes in for me is if you go back to episode 3, show 3 with Cory Doctorow, big portion of what we talk about in that interview that Steve did with him was the digital rights media and the protections that what the publishers and what everybody's doing and placing on our games, on our movies, on our books. And it changes to where, as consumers, we really lose a lot of power. PlayStation now is packaging these games. There's more and more digital games. You know, they're talking about the next-gen consoles after this current one, after PS5 comes out or whatever else, is going to probably be discless. They're going to go to purely
even
digital
Xbox
space.
Is releasing a 1S without a disc drive.
Yeah. So the more and more they go into purely digital space, it just comes down to, hey, do we ever actually own the digital games? When the DRM is owned by the publishers, the money that we're spending on it, are we just paying a lot of money up front to rent these games?
And what's odd is that you're not, the digital version of these games is not cheaper than buying the hard copy at the store. So they want to push this digital realm. And I've actually switched to digital. I haven't bought a hard copy game, I don't know in how long, just out of my sheer laziness.
Yeah,
when I'm playing one game and I want to switch to another, I don't want to get up, do the disc dance and all that shit. So I all my favorite games, I started just buying digitally. So I moved that way out of sheer human laziness. But you don't get to share your game. So I can't ever loan a game out to somebody to say, hey, I bought this new game. It's really cool. You should give it a whirl. I already beat it. Here, go ahead and play it and do a game trade or a game swap. You can't resell it to like GameStop. You know, GameStop took a huge hit when digital downloads became widely popular. You know, so why is it the same price? If I'm losing, I'm losing abilities that I had with the hard copy, but yet you're charging me the same price for a product that you don't have to print a case, you don't have to print artwork for, you don't have to make the disc anymore. The company's actually saving money on the back end, is charging me more money or charging me the same amount for essentially just ones and zeros.
Again, where I think this just has some significant relevance is the conversation of, you know, it comes down to the manufacturers, the individuals making these, the game publishers, book publishers, it's just getting to a point that while we pay for technology, that technology is all requiring some level of software, and the manufacturers continue to hold that, which means that, we pay a lot of money for the technology, but they control the rights of how we use that technology. And it becomes more and more intrusive. And this is just another example of, am I planning on participating in hate speech and getting banned? No. But
where
like
do they
them
draw
having
the line?
The,
so exactly. right now it's white supremacy. Are they going to take my hundreds and hundreds of dollars of games away because I called some 14-year-old little shit, you know, a douche nozzle while I was, you know, because I mean, I'm from the old school. I'm an old school gamer. Back in my early 20s, the Halo 2.
Oh yeah,
the Xbox 360 chat, like, man, like these
it wasn't,
kids nowadays.
It wasn't hate speech against a class of people, but it was a lot of hate in the just, online rooms there.
Oh yeah, it was just hateful, whatever. You know what I mean? So yeah, where are they going to draw the line?
Is there going to be expletive, bans? Is there going to be whatever else? In the end, I just have a problem with when you purchase something,
I own
them
it.
Having the control to dictate our behavior to say, nope, you don't own, you are purchasing the rights, but we control the terms and conditions on what gives you the rights to this media.
And I'm interested to know if there's any anything in the terms of service that specify this. You know,
does it matter? I don't know. Nobody reads that thing. So it's going to be an interesting thing. I'm hoping that it's really more of a technical glitch, right? That when they banned him, that right now PSN hasn't, that PlayStation just didn't think this through. So it's just a one button for whatever guy is sitting behind the computer and bans him, and then it just shuts down everything that's linked to PSN. And that they can go ahead and retroactively fix this and make it to where a ban is only to online systems and not your downloaded hard drive.
I truly only believe they're going to care about doing something like that if people like us talk about it. If this goes gets swept under the rug and no one gives a shit that this white supremacist dude lost all his video games, then they'll just continue to do that. You know, and like, I just want to state again, we are not on the side of the white supremacist dude. We are on the side of buying something and owning it. And yeah, I think
and I'm not having how we engage with the products that we've purchased, whether it's digital or physical products. I don't want anybody telling me how I use said product.
Yeah, and I think I might send out a tweet to Cory Doctorow today and see if he has any feelings on this or anything, because this is right up his alley. You know what I mean? And it's crazy because we literally just talked about this two episodes ago about, you know, and it plays into his book Radicalized with the whole toaster story and you know, pirating and things like that. So it's very troubling to see this trend now really starting to creep into multiple aspects of our lives.
Yeah. You know, talking about downloadable games. Make a really weird transition here from hate speech to family gaming. All right.
It's gaming. It's all gaming related. And I did want to... So me and you have been having some funny conversations because a few months ago, Xbox on their free game of the month put up this game called Overcooked. And I gave it a shot. You know, I like just getting some easy achievement points. I'm an achievement point whore. I do like racking up my gamer score. I'm nearing 50K on my gamer score, so I am very proud of that. So I was like, let me see what this Overcooked is about. Maybe I could get a few achievements from the first level of, you know, those intro achievements that you get. And I started to play it, and it was very oddly addictive. It's a very simple game where you run a kitchen. You got to get the item, chop the item, cook the item, put it on the plate, put it out to serve, and it's all under time constraints. And the kitchens are kind of puzzly mazes and stuff. Upon playing it, my 4-year-old daughter seen me playing it, and I'm starting to experiment with what she can and can't do in video games, and for some reason she was able to pick this one up pretty easily. You know, is she watched me play it a few times, got the concept, and now she's just working on the kind of hand-eye coordination of the game. And you know, so I recommended it to my brother because he's got two kids, and I know Overcooked 2 is Xbox Live playable, so it's something we can maybe do as a family, us being half a country apart. And we found that it is overwhelmingly frustrating to play with your kids. Now, I'm very supportive when it comes to, like, my daughter and, like, not getting something right away. I tend to be very calm, cool, collected. Now let's try again. Let's do this.
No, but then you put a 2-minute countdown in the corner of the screen, and all of a sudden I'm yelling at my 5-year-old, chop the lettuce. Yeah, chop the lettuce. What are you doing? Just chop the lettuce. I will do everything else.
That internal monologue. You know, put it on the fucking bun. Just put it on the fucking bun. The stove is going to get it. It's going to set on fire. And then the truck pulls away and you're locked out. And like, oh, shit, here. Now we're all kitchens on fire. Like, I'm looking at my 4-year-old like, I'm such a dick. Like... It is unbelievably fun to play with her, but at the same time, unbelievably frustrating. So our brother Jake, her uncle, came over the other week, and I told him, I was like, hey man, you ever heard of this Overcooked game? He's like, yeah, I heard of it. I was like, you gotta help me beat a couple of these levels, because I'm playing with a 4-year-old and I can't fucking get it, and I can't do it by myself.
So I played it a little bit last night with the kids, and Natalie was playing with the kids. We were all taking turns kind of playing it. We would put it on just practice mode for Ellie and Kenny, let them play with no time or whatever else. And then after we put the kids to bed, Natalie and I had to play a solid progression into,
like,
the story
strategy.
Just the two of us. Yeah, just really laying it out. You're doing the rice, I'm doing the I'm cutting the fish. Let's make some sushi rolls. And it's a fun game. I'm still kind of a weird parent in the sense that I still don't know what level of relationship I want my kids to have with gaming. You know, I got a 7 and 5-year-old, and like my 5-year-old, I introduced him to this game in a moment of weakness like 4 days ago. Just was sitting around, he was driving me nuts. We had nothing else to do, and I just turned on the Xbox. I said, all right, I'm going to try my first game with him. This is the first time he's ever really held a controller, played a game. And I turned on. And since that day.
Oh, you might have.
All he talks
you
about.
You might have well have mainlined it right into his vein.
Oh, my God. All he talks about all day long is just coming in, tugging on me, just Overcooked? 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 Overcooked so, now? Not Overcooked? And it's just like, oh, my. Like, exactly. Like, it is. There is nothing in reality that competes with what they can do on a screen. And it's like, I got a trampoline outside. Go jump. Go do something else. So there's like 18 kids out front. Go get on your bike. And go
I know.
Ride.
I'm having the same problem with Layla. She, you know, she's maxed out the levels she can play on Overcooked. So we're kind of like at a holding pattern for her to mature in video games for that. So I broke down and bought the Paw Patrol game for her, you know, which is an easy side scroller that is kind of really helping her develop that like running and jumping skill, like the Super Mario Brothers kind of skill. At the minute she gets home, so what are we gonna do? Can we play a game? Can we play a Paw Patrol game? And I was like, no, we gotta eat dinner. We gotta, you know, play with Ada. Let's spend some family time. Let's hang out. And she just, I think I want to play the game. Dad, I think I want to play Paw Patrol.
Yeah. Like literally 4 days ago, before introducing the game, every night it was kids wanting to play Monopoly Deal or another game of Uno or Ticket to Ride or whatever else board games. And now since in the last 4 days, it has shifted to where it's like, nah, Dad, I don't want to play them card games. I don't want to play a board game, Dad. Why would I want to play Ticket to Ride right now?
Yeah, well, I kind of feel partly responsible because I did give you that Xbox for Christmas. I did. I gave you Pandora's box, but you opened it, motherfucker.
I waited quite a while to open it, and I immediately regret it. Not just for the kids, but for my own productivity because I spent too much time playing it with Natalie.
Well, see, for me, we're not being the best of parents by letting them have extra screen time, I guess you could say. But at the same time, you know, I do want the cousins all to have kind of a relationship. Yeah. And I am looking forward to the point where Layla puts on the headset and, you know, Bub and Wheezy put on the headset and they could all play a game together. You being in California.
We grew up playing games our entire damn time. And we found a balance.
We're degenerate fucks too. So
yeah, I mean, yeah, but there's a whole lot of factors that play into that. It's not just video games. And there's a balance to be had there. I haven't figured out what that balance is going to be as a parent of young kids. It's definitely a challenge. Which takes us to our first interview, kind of bringing up some nerd culture and keeping kids physically engaged with some toys.
Yeah, getting them away from the screens. And I found these guys to be really interesting. So they have a toy line, but the big trend now in toys is this unwrapping, unboxing. You know, so the LOLs and a lot of these mystery toys that you get, you buy a box for $5 and you don't know the toy in there and they just keep wanting to buy them. Well, most of them, it's in a plastic bag, it's in an egg, it's in a something, you unwrap it and it's done. What they have done is try to introduce a science component to that whole unboxing, which I can appreciate. You know, you buy the mystery toy, it comes in a dissolvable like bath bomb ball, you put the ball in a beaker, you hit the plungers, the kid puts on their goggles and their lab coat, they have tongs to pull it out of the beaker with, and it just, you know, it dissolves it and they get a mystery toy. What I do like about it also is that you can repackage it. They give you the recipe to make that cornstarch stuff so that you can make another ball. And you're not suckered into buying 50 beaker creatures, dissolving them, and then it's over. Like you can buy 5 of them and make the cornstarch yourself and keep redoing the experiment over and over and over. And I just really appreciate the making the science aspect of it kind of cool and kind of like a fun thing so that, you know, they look at these things in more of a positive light.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of any physical component that we can kind of incorporate into science, whatever else. Like my daughter's super into Shopkins, which if anybody's a parent out here really to know about, just don't ever, do it. I've got hundreds of these things around, and there's no real value other
than
just...
And they're such a choking hazard. I don't, like, they're so tiny.
Yeah.
Oh, and I don't understand, like, there was a day when we were kids where they weren't allowed to make, like, toys that small. I don't know.
No, they just made it with
Chinese lead paint. I don't know who paid to deregulate the shit out of that.
But, there's so many toys that are just, they just don't bring value. I mean, other than just kind of a little bit of joy to kids, but who cares about that? Let's care about science. Yeah. And science is what matters. And
I'm trying to raise good humans. Fuck their joy.
I like the fact that this does kind of incorporate, it's not real hard science, but it could be. You could use this to transition and incorporate if, depending on, you know, how you want to parent and how you want to introduce this and how you want to, you know, force them to wear the lab coat and talk about, you know, safety,
chemical,
making them wear the goggles and chemical
and
reactions.
Stuff,
exactly.
Like that,
yeah, there's a way to incorporate this. There's also a way just to give it to the kids and say, here's a bowl of water and just toss it in there and go find your toy. But I like this movement. If your kids are going to be into the collectibles, which all kids are right now, it's impossible to go down the toy store and not see the LOL dolls, the Shopkins, all these little tiny collectibles that exist. Beaker Creatures is just a cooler one, in my opinion. It's actually a really interesting piece. And the Beaker Creature guys explain a little bit of what their vision is and what they're trying to do in the interview with Steve. So we'll go ahead and play that for you now.
All right, welcome. We're here at the Learning Resources booth with the Beaker Creature guys. How you doing today?
Good. How's it going?
What are you guys trying to accomplish today with this whole Beaker Creatures line?
You know, with Beaker Creatures, we're trying to... we know kids love collectibles, so we want to introduce some science into that, bring in some education, and we do it in a fun way. So you get the Beaker Creature Super Lab, and you get these cool reactor pods. So with those, you put them in, and you push the plungers down and you get this cool bubbly reaction and extract these cool little creatures and then learn about the different plants they're from.
Yeah, so mostly the toy reveal toys are just kind of unwrap a bunch of plastic, open a box, and get your prize. So what you guys are trying to do is get kids more involved, wear a lab coat, wear the goggles, have the tongs, and really try to incorporate a science aspect with the toy reveal process.
Yeah, exactly. So we want to integrate science and learning into everything we put out as a company, Learning Resources. So we want to do that in a fun way. We know collectibles are popular, but, you know, parents, you know, sometimes they don't really see, like, the point of them at times with them. So we want to introduce the science along with, like, the lab set and the reactor pods. We give a bunch of different activities you can do at home after revealing the creature. So creatures love taking slime baths. So we give you ingredients, household ingredients you can kind of use and create slime to put them in that. Okay. Or even creating your own pods. Like, you actually remake your own pod.
Really?
Using cornstarch and a few other ingredients. And
Parents can take these collectibles, repot them, so you can do the whole process over and over again?
Exactly, yeah. And we have a lot of these like lesson plans, activities, all on our microsite, the beakercreatures.com microsite.
I also see that you guys have a comic book that's associated with this. Is that something you're also trying to expand on, give these characters a kind of backstory and a little bit more content for the children?
Yeah, I mean, all these characters come with different personalities. They come from different planets. They arrived on Earth from this planet, so we kind of wanted to integrate, you know, where they're from, and then they look for learning on Earth. So the Frostonians are from a cold climate, so they come to Earth looking for places on Earth that have a cold climate. They learn about polar bears, they learn about Antarctica, all the cool stuff they have here. But yeah, going back to the comic book, being that we're at C2E2, we kind of wanted to fit in a little bit better. I mean, we've gotten a great reaction from everyone here, but we thought we'd make a limited edition comic book just for the occasion, and we're handing them out.
Now, how high are your ambitions with the Beaker Creatures and the characters? I mean, you're pushing the comic. Do you envision maybe having a cartoon one day that associates with these characters? Things like that, maybe, you know, Netflix, a little 30-minute kind of a cartoon that goes along with them?
Yeah, we'd love to. I mean, we've definitely been talking about like doing that type of stuff. You know, we have a lot of characters. So the first series already has 35 characters to collect. Series 2 just came out last month, and that's another 30. By the end of the year, we're going to have 100 different characters and from different planets. So the opportunity is endless. If you look at some of the animations and the creatures, our creative team did a great job.
They're very colorful. They're very vibrant. They're interesting looking. I think they really engage children. I'm really liking what you guys are doing here, especially as a father of a small child, just to make science a background of their life. You know, you don't always have to throw them in a STEM math class or anything, but just
want to make it approachable.
Exactly. Yeah. Just wearing the jacket and thinking that wearing a lab coat is cool and having fun with the goggles and tongs. These are all things that make science just a normal part of their life rather than something extra.
Yeah, and we've been doing that here at C2E2. We have the whole Mad Lab background. So people have been putting on the lab gear, the lab glasses, and taking their Mad Lab pictures here. So kids have been having fun with it, adults too. It's been a blast.
No, that's great. So where can they find you at? Is that Learning Resources?
Yeah, you can find their products on learningresources.com. We're also available at Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, and Target as well.
Awesome, awesome. Well, thank you very much for your time. I hope you guys will have a great success.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, and there you were with Beaker Creatures. That's still some old content from C2E2. If you heard the audio quality a little low or noisy back there, that's on the con floor with Steven and Beaker Creatures. And again, they're just doing something different. If you're interested, they've got on a YouTube channel for CKN Toys, where they show kids kind of playing with this. If you want to get your kids interested or play those videos for the kids, see if it's something they want. And then you can purchase these on Amazon or Target or wherever you happen to shop.
And
I'll
be posting my review on the toy with our affiliate links in there if you want to purchase them from there. They did give Layla a free set, so she did get to play with it. I did get to watch it, so I'm going to write a little review up on that, and that'll post the same day or right after this show airs.
All right, and then another interview to play today is with Sue Burke, who is author of the book Semiosis. She has her second book in this series coming out in the fall. She's a longtime journalist, a big sci-fi fan.
Yeah, you want to talk about intimidating? Try interviewing a 20-year journalist for your first goddamn con. That was fucking great.
Well, she talks a lot about her backstory, so without kind of stealing the thunder of the interview, we'll go ahead and play that for you now.
Welcome. I'm here with Sue Burke, author of Semiosis. Thank you for taking some time out today. I know these cons can be a little hectic, so...
Well, thank you for talking to me.
Any minutes you give us, we really appreciate. Could you just give our listeners a quick background as to, where you're from, where you're schooling, what got you into writing?
Well, I'm originally from Milwaukee, and I always wanted to be a writer from the time I knew what writing was. And you can thank my mother for that, because she read me books all the time. I worked as a journalist for several decades, which was an excellent job because I never knew what I was going to do next. It could be a school board budget. It could be a mass murderer, because I did that too. And I just got a chance to learn a lot. But I was always reading science fiction and watching science fiction and wanted to move into writing that as well. So I did.
Was it the literary science fiction that got you into it, or was it more,
Star Wars pushed
a lot of people, the space race pushed
a
lot of people?
Well, I was reading a lot, and at the time, I was a teenager, there were a lot of books, but there was some television, it was really horrible, but my mother insisted I had to watch this show. It was a new show, but it was really, really good, and I would like it. It was Star Trek.
Well, I'm assuming a lot of people got into it.
I'm an older person for people who can't see me on the radio.
Do you, so being a Star Trek fan, there's always, a difference between the Star Trek and Star Wars fans. The Star Trek,
science-based rather than fantasy. Fun. I liked it all.
Okay, so you don't preference, a science-based more towards space fantasy. You just love the
A good
the sci-fi.
Story well told.
Okay. So now... You published your first book, Semiosis. How was that process for you? At what time did you stop being a journalist and consider yourself a novelist?
There was never a stop or a start. I mean, I'd be doing journalism right now, except it's hard to get work in that field right now. I do write articles still. I write fiction now. I'm also a translator. I lived for 17 years in Spain, so I'm a certified Spanish to English translator. So I do translation as well.
That's very interesting.
If it's words, I'll do it.
do you translate your novels yourself for your Spanish readers?
No, it's really, really hard to translate into a language that is not your native language. But I do know the translator in Spain.
Being fluent in another language, do you find that helps you express literary different? Because, like you said, things translate different. There's other cultures have sayings that don't really transfer over well. Do you find that being bilingual helps you in your writing at all?
It makes you much more attentive to language. One example is that what is beautiful writing in Spanish is very, very different from beautiful writing in English. And when you're translating, you have to bear that in mind, that this is supposed to be beautiful, but if I do it word for word, it will be horrible. I have to transfer it into beautiful English, which means rearranging a lot of things.
Okay, that's very interesting. Now, for our listeners, could you just give us the quick, couple-minute elevator pitch for Semiosis?
Well, this book will make you afraid of your houseplants. Some colonists go to another planet.
Yes.
To set up an agricultural colony, and they very quickly discover that the plants there are intelligent, some more than others, some more helpful than others. On the whole, I mean, like plants here, they don't mind being eaten. I mean, an apple wants you to eat the apple.
That's why it tastes good.
And then you spread the seeds. And now apples have spread all around the world. We care for them as if they were our own children. Apples could not be happier, and all they have to do is give us a little bit of food. So you're on another planet. The plants want to strike the same sort of a deal, but things go wrong.
So does the symbiotic relationship between humans and nature, does that really interest you? Is that what kind of drove you to write this book?
Well, actually, what drove me to write the book was I have a lot of houseplants. And one of the house plants killed another plant. And I thought,
that wasn't nice.
No. And then a month later, another plant attacked another plant. And I thought, this is very strange. So I started doing research. Plants are active, in fact, aggressive. We can't tell because they're slow. But plants are very aware of their environment. They know what's going on. They take action as best they can, as fast as they can, which, again, we're lucky it's slow. So these are not passive creatures. So my thought was, because by then I was writing science fiction, what if I could just jump them up a little bit faster so that they could be at human speed, but still do what plants do?
Oh, that's very interesting.
And so, remember, they are aggressive and they will kill each other. They will kill us if we get in the way.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't walk in the forest and just eat any random leaf. We've learned that through human evolution, that mm-hmm. there are plants that, will literally kill you if you try to make it food. How did it feel to have your work received so well that now you have a second novel? Did you pitch both of them to the publisher at once? And, did you write the full story and they broke it down into two books? How did that work?
My original plan was to write a story that when I started writing it, I realized could not be one book because it would just be too fat.
Okay.
So I split it in two then and wrote the first book and brought it to an end. This is the standalone book. And then I wrote the second book and also as much standalone as I could make it. So then when I pitched it, I said there were two books and start with one, see if it works.
And the second book is Interference. With Interference, it was pitched to me in the synopsis that it was a duology. So,
yes.
Are you wrapping up this series and then be working on something upcoming?
Yeah, I'm
writing
an unrelated novel right now.
Okay.
Although there could be a third book. I know what happens.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the second book does come to an end.
Okay, so in October, when our readers, if they pick up Semiosis, they can get the completion, this fall, which is very interesting. Do you often do these cons come and try to do this type of publicity with you only having one book out? Are you very familiar with the circuit?
Well, I've been coming to science fiction conventions since the 1990s. Just because they're fun.
I really thank you for taking some of your time out. I know you have two panels to do and it's a busy day. Where can our listeners find you at if they wanted to learn more about you? Do you have a Twitter?
They have Twitter. Their website just set up for Semiosys. And it's semiosispax.com.
Okay, so that's semiosispax.com. Mm-hmm. And do you have a personal Twitter that they can converse with you?
I'm Sue Burke Spain.
Sue Burke Spain at Twitter. Mm-hmm. All right, well, thank you very much for your time. I'm glad that we got to showcase some of your work. It sounds very interesting. We're looking forward to picking up a copy and writing a review on it on our site. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Well, thank you for talking to me.
Again, yeah, another interview from Steve at C2E2 with Sue Burke. And the book premise is actually really, really cool. And I haven't yet to pick this one up and read it myself. It is this cool concept of, you know, in a different world where plans are moving at a different speed and they thrive in a different way than here. Could they dominate? Would we be able to play nice?
I did like how she, you know, she touched a little bit on how even in our world we have this symbiotic relationship with plants, you know, not the way they have it in her book, but that's kind of what inspired her was seeing, you know, we breathe in what they put out, they breathe in what we put out. There's this, very symbiotic relationship we have with plants, and she just kind of expanded on that. Our book reviewer, Megan, did finish that and wrote a review. I'll be posting that the same day this podcast launches. So if you do want to read the review, that'll be up today for your reading pleasure. And I do encourage you to check it out. She gave it a good review. It's an interesting book.
Yeah, and again, it's a two-part series. The second part coming out this fall, so you won't have to wait too long before you can kind of get a wrap up what Sue's trying to do there. But all of this can be found. So links to Beaker Creatures, to some of their toys, to Sue Burke's book, as well as the review, it's all going to be found on thenerdcantina.com/show5. And at this point, this is the end of the show. And I thank you for listening to another episode. We got 5 down now, a little over a month of our podcasting journey here. And we're enjoying it. We're having a good time. We're hoping that those who are listening are having a good time. Again, if this is your first episode, hey, please subscribe on whatever podcast player you're listening to. Check out our show notes at thenerdcantina.com/show5. There you'll find links to our emails. I can be found at ken@thenerdcantina.com. We also have a voicemail line that you can call in and let us know your thoughts. Let us know if anything that we said today struck a chord, either something you disagreed with or something that you just want your voice heard. Give us a call. We'll gladly play it on a podcast or use it as our own fuel for some discussions that we have down the road.
Yeah, well, I just want to thank everybody for coming out and listening to us. It really does mean a lot. I check the analytics and the stats quite often to gauge our progress and how we're doing. And your feedback is very much appreciated. So keep engaging with us. Leave comments on the articles, on the sites. We check it all. So don't think that your words are going to go to waste.
All right. Well, with that said, we'll talk again next week with a big week following Endgame.
Buddy.
We've also got an interview that we're excited to have. It's going to be a big one. So join us for episode 6. Again, subscribe. Ratings and reviews on iTunes are always helpful in this stage of our podcasting journey. So support us wherever you can.
And tell a friend.
Take a minute. All right. Well, thank you and farewell, nerds.
Take care.